from Vermont Public Radio. This is The Frequency. I'm Henry Epp.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. It's Thursday, March 4th. Here are today's headlines.
Voters in 24 towns agreed to allow retail marijuana shops in Tuesday's town meeting day elections. Larger communities like Burlington and Brattleboro were expected to approve their cannabis measures on Tuesday, and they did. But Eli Harrington, who's a pro-cannabis advocate, says a lot of small towns also supported retail pot.
And I think a lot of places that if you had asked 3 or 4 years ago if they would approve this, it would have been a hard no. So, you know, it really shows how much things have changed.
Other towns that approved cannabis shops include Winooski, Bennington, Montpelier,
Danby, Paulette, Danville,
Windsor, Stratford, Middlebury,
Vergennes, Waterbury, Pownall,
Brandon, Salisbury, Burke,
Sutton, Barton, Peacham,
Brownington, Duxbury, Berlin, and Randolph. Now the state has to set up the rules and regulations for the new industry. Only 3 towns, Richmond, Linden, and Newport, rejected the cannabis question on town meeting day.
The Addison County town of Ripton took a big step towards preventing its elementary school from closing on town meeting day. 6 of the towns in the Addison Central School District voted to allow the town of Ripton to leave the district. Ripton residents voted to leave earlier in the year after it became clear that the district's consolidation plan would see their elementary school closed. But in order to leave, they needed permission from the other communities in the district. The final decision to allow Ripton Elementary to leave now rests with the State Board of Education.
More than 107,000 Vermonters, which is nearly 20% of the population over the age of 16, have now gotten at least one dose of a coronavirus vaccine. Meanwhile, health officials reported 115 new COVID-19 cases yesterday. 35 were in Orleans County, which is dealing with an outbreak at a prison in Newport involving 127 inmates and 10 staff members, which we'll hear more about after this.
And Gills Point S Tire and Auto Service, offering tire and brake service, oil changes, and state inspections. Online at gillspointstire.com. The Frequency is sponsored by the Autosaver Group's year-end sales event going on now at all 15 dealerships in Vermont and Western New Hampshire. Savings on their entire lineup, from trucks, SUVs, and EVs to fuel-efficient cars and family-friendly models. Inventory from all stores at autosavergroup.com.
So like we just mentioned, Northern State Correctional Facility in Newport is dealing with one of Vermont's most severe COVID-19 outbreaks since the start of the pandemic. I spoke about that with James Lyle, the executive director of the ACLU of Vermont. He says this outbreak was preventable.
At this point, Governor Scott owns this. He could have prevented this outbreak just as he could have prevented earlier outbreaks, and he could still take action to prevent future outbreaks in Vermont prisons by vaccinating all of the people in these facilities and by taking steps to safely release more Vermonters from these facilities where they are at heightened risk of harm.
You've been calling for those things for a while now. The population in Vermont prisons did drop significantly last year. Why do you think it should go down more at this point?
Because people in congregate settings, including prisons, can't socially distance. The science is very clear on that, and we've seen, it's not just a hypothetical risk. We've now seen multiple major outbreaks that we haven't seen really in any other setting. And it's really only a matter of luck that nobody has died yet. So, yes, the prison population is down, but that is not because the Scott administration, Governor Scott, has taken no action, executive action, or proposed or supported legislative action to do more to further reduce the number of people in prison. And has really provided no coherent explanation for, you know, ignoring the science in this particular context, the fact that incarcerated Vermonters are at heightened risk. That risk extends to all Vermont communities. And again, it's not hypothetical. We keep seeing these outbreaks, and we're going to continue to see more. The inaction at this point is just extremely reckless, and it's inhumane.
Is your organization hearing from specific inmates who are at the Newport prison right now?
We're contacted by incarcerated Vermonters and their families regularly. Over the entire year of this pandemic, they've consistently expressed great concern at the neglect and the lack of information and the risks that they and their loved ones are being subjected to. We've been trying to voice those concerns ourselves on their behalf. This is shameful. Vermonters are a compassionate and responsible people. We know that we're in this pandemic together. We need to reject the the underlying punitive mindset that I think is at the bottom of this, that runs through so much of our criminal justice system and our approach to incarcerated people. We need to recognize and act on the full humanity of all the people in our prisons, especially right now. And Governor Scott has not done that.
The Scott administration did announce on Tuesday that it will be vaccinating or prioritizing vaccinations for some public safety officials, including corrections staff, as I understand it. Do you think that's a step in the right direction?
Yeah, but the contrast is pretty stark. Why prioritize one subset of the population that lives and works in Vermont's prisons and not the other? Why apply a science-based proactive approach to the pandemic response outside of our prisons, but have a double standard and not follow the science for people inside our prisons? The people in our prisons are members of our families and our communities. There are 6,000 Vermont children who have incarcerated parents. None of these people were sent to suffer or die in a pandemic. You know, Vermonters expect compassionate and responsible government, and they're not getting that in the response to the pandemic in Vermont's prisons.
Well, in terms of your organization's role, beyond advocating for more vaccinations of incarcerated people, are there other ways the ACLU is pushing for more action on this? I mean, is there any litigation action in the works?
You know, we can't always speak to specific litigations. Certainly, ACLU affiliates around the country have deployed a variety of strategies, and we have seen governors and legislatures around the country take action, sometimes forced through litigation, sometimes voluntarily, to reduce the risk. But we need people to speak up. If they are concerned with the continuing outbreaks in Vermont's prison system, they need to call their elected officials, call the governor, and tell them to take action.
James Lyle is the executive director of the ACLU of Vermont. James, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
And now we do have some more town meeting results to cover. The biggest ticket item on most ballots was the local school budget proposal. And voters, by and large, were in a giving mood. Based on results so far, only three districts saw their spending plans shot down. That happened in Barry, Georgia, and Wolcott. The 83 other districts that VPR has confirmed results for all saw their budget proposals get approved.
Our colleague Peter Hirschfeld has been tracking these results, and I spoke with him to help us put this all in context. He said, while some towns delayed their town meeting, the majority of districts did vote on their budgets on Tuesday.
We still have a few stragglers out there that we don't have results from yet. What we know as of now, though, is that voters have rejected budgets in only three districts. That success rate is high even by Vermont standards, where voters have historically been pretty supportive of local school spending plans. I talked to Jeff Francis earlier today, and he's the head of the Vermont Superintendents Association. And he said he thinks the pandemic figured pretty prominently in people's minds when they went to the polls yesterday.
I think that the electorate understands what schools are up against, and they are supporting the work that's being done in schools right now.
It really is difficult, Henry, to overstate the enormity of the task that teachers, bus drivers, custodial staff, paraeducators, and school administrators have taken on over the last year. And the high rate of success in budget votes yesterday seems to be a sign that voters appreciate the job those folks are doing.
Yeah, right. Well, the pandemic has added significant costs to school districts. Did school boards have to ask for large increases in spending as a result of that?
You're correct, Henry. The pandemic has been an enormous cost driver for students, and this problem is compounded by the fact that the tax base we rely on to pay for public schools in Vermont is simultaneously facing its own headwinds, right? I mean, there are still a lot of people without jobs, still a lot of people dealing with financial stresses related to the pandemic. Sue Siglowski is the head of the Vermont School Boards Association, and I asked her earlier today how boards are navigating that tension.
They're focused on the needs of the students and also mindful of what their communities will support.
And they were mindful, Henry. The overall increase in school spending based on the budgets that have been proposed this year is a little less than 2%, which is less than the rate of inflation. There's a reason, though, that boards were able to do that, and that's because they know there are significant federal coronavirus relief dollars waiting in the wings to help schools deal with some of the costs they're going to have to face later this year. We know a lot of students are struggling mightily as a result of these virtual learning environments they've been in. A lot of those students are going to require intensive interventions, both academic and emotional, in order to recover from everything they've gone through during this pandemic. Unfortunately, Vermont school districts are slated to receive about $130 million in federal funds during the next fiscal year. That comes out to more than $1,500 a student. And foreknowledge of that money being there really allowed school boards to avoid the kind of massive budget increases we might have otherwise seen.
Well, finally, Pete, property taxes are the main source of revenue for education spending here in Vermont. And there's already a lot of concern in Vermont over how high property tax rates are. So how will yesterday's budget votes affect tax rates for homeowners and businesses?
Yeah, the property tax is the brass tax when it comes to the effect of these school budget proposals. And up until about a month ago, it was looking dire. Even with just that 2% increase in education spending, the Scott administration was forecasting a property tax rate hike of nearly 10% next year. And that's because some of the other revenues that support education spending looked to be drying up as a result of the pandemic. Those revenues recovered, though, recovered shockingly well, actually. And that allowed House lawmakers to pass a bill last month that would send statewide rates for homeowners and businesses up by about 3%. It's not nothing, but it's a far cry from the 9% we were looking at the beginning of the year. And there are a lot of education officials who say that that reduction in proposed rates is one of the reasons that school budget proposals met with such success yesterday.
That's VPR's Pete Hirschfeld. Pete, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Howard Weiss-Tisman and Emily Aiken.
We're pretty sure we pronounced all those town names correctly earlier, but if you want to check whether we did, you can find a pronunciation guide to Vermont town names at our website, vpr.org. Our executive producer is Mark Davis, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Henry Epp.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. Talk to you tomorrow.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.